G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 8B.
Now, the crucial question again is, have we categories of wholeness? Are our categories holistic categories? Only if they are holistic, we know that they are scientific. Well, Mrs. Eddy speaks about that, those categories. She says that the categories of metaphysics rest on one basis, namely the divine mind. So she said, what I present are only categories of the divine mind of God, so they must be holistic categories. Well, mind is just one term for God, and we know that mind is synonymous with the other terms for God, like spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And so we can see that what Mrs. Eddy presents must be categories of wholeness. Now, we know those categories of wholeness, that she has three main categories of wholeness, namely the seven synonymous term, second, the four sides of the city, word, Christ, Christianity, and science, and she has a third big main category of being, namely the levels of science. Science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. These are the three main big categories of being that Mrs. Eddy uses, and all these three categories are holistic. And she brings it out that they are holistic by capitalizing these categories. So she used a very interesting method that nobody before her has ever used to bring out what are the categories and what are the elements. The elements are the ideas, but the categories are really the capitalized term that form three main categories. So that she differentiates between three great categories, and we can see that the first category is the ontological category, which will tell us something about the nature of God, the seven synonymous term. So it's a category of the nature of God. Then the four sides of the holy city is the category of the operational sense of God. Just like we had in arithmetic the 10 digits first, and then the four operation with which those 10 digits are being used. And as a third great category of being are the dimensional sense of being, that from the highest to the lowest level, namely the levels of science. That this three categories, which all are represented, symbolized through capitalized terms, constitute really the ontological categories of being. In case you feel, that's interesting, yes, that may be so, oh yes, that's Mrs. Eddy teaching, I would like you to stand in awe before it. I just can't get away from that wonderment that I always have, and which I think I renew day by day, even if it's just for a little while, to think that mankind since thousands of years has tried to understand what's going on in the world, to try to find the true Weltanschauung, the true meaning of the world, what's going on in the world, what is actually going on, what's the good of it, what is the meaning of it, does that world make sense, how does it make sense? Thousands of years, the best minds have tried to find how to approach this infinite subject. And they knew somehow that they needed categories. Right from the Greeks, they began to think about categories. The modern philosophers have tried to find the categories of being, those fundamental categories that make up our being, our life also. And to think that only recently one has found out those ontological categories, those categories on which we can rely and on which we can work out our own salvation. This is terrific. We should feel the grace of it, the magnitude of it, so to say, the question, why are we chosen to know about it? Why not the other 5 billion people on earth? You have heard just 2 days ago, the 5th billion child has been born. 5th billion. Well, that's already the double of population that the earth should have. They calculate that we only should have about 2.5 or 6 billion people for this earth. All the rest is already overpopulation. And that we had in the 2030s. And within that short time, it has doubled. And towards the end of this century, beginning of the next century, it may be doubled again on the same space of earth that we have. We can't enlarge the space. So there are some problems waiting for us. So that was a side remark. I come back to the wonder of wonders, that we live in an age which is the most beautiful age, the most progressive age we can think of spiritually, where the highest things are happening spiritually, much more than at Jesus' time. Said, well, I tell you a lot, but later on you will know more. And I can't tell you everything, but there will be a comforter, divine science, which will tell you more. So we must see that we are living in a very big era. But we must value that era and see why on earth are we right now witnessing within that century, within those few decades that we have been living, the appearance of the answer for the whole ontological question, what is the one and only being, and can fathom it through the categories of being. When we have the categories of being, we come to the next point, law. I introduced that further criterion of law as the interrelationship of holistic categories. We have seen that if we have categories, and in our case 3 holistic categories, that they cannot stand alone, or else we would split up the whole into 3 parts. Therefore, in order that we don't split them up and fragment being, we must see that those 3 main categories are wedded to each other, that they, perhaps better, that they blend with each other. That where you have 1 category, you have also the 2nd and the 3rd category. Where you have the 2nd category, you also have the 1st and 3rd category. We can't separate them. They are only separated in order to differentiate for the sake of for us to understand the subject. So these categories must be related by a law that unites them into a holistic oneness. Well, here we come to law, and we have seen that Mrs. Eddy would explain law as only that which applies to God, that science refers only to the laws of God. So only when we interrelate categories of being, we really use divine holistic laws. Or she says, science is the immutable law of God good. So, again, we get a sense that only if we see the relationship of holistic categories, that only then we really contemplate a law of God. Now, this corrects an old sense of law. In the old science, we knew the highest law, or the most reliable law, the most general law that we knew was the law of cause and effect. I've already touched on it quickly before, and so I want to say some few more words about it. This law of cause and effect, we can see, is not the holistic law, because we considered it as a beginning, as cause, and as an ending, as effect. So it is a closed system, it is narrow, it's limited, it cannot be holistic. But new science has seen that very clearly today, especially through the ecological situation, that actually a cause that leads to an effect, as we have seen it, brings about an effect which again is the cause of side effects, of further effects, and that these further effects are again the cause of further effects. On the other end of the law is the cause, and we have seen that the cause is not just happening out of nothing, but that the cause is the effect of causes that preceded it, of remote, predisposing causes that come to a point of the exciting cause that we then take aware and only contemplate that little bit of cause and effect, but we don't take into consideration the predisposing cause and not take into consideration the after effects. We said, all right, if we investigate that on both ends to the nth degree, we can see that there is actually no such a law as cause and effect, because they are limited concepts. So that when we have an unlimited cause, we have an unlimited effect, and if both are unlimited, actually we have no more cause and effect, we have just the all. And that is the scientific sense of it. How does Mrs. Eddy bring that out? She too, even in the realm of the unreal, she could see that. For instance, she says, mortal mind, or the mind of mortals, is the remote, the predisposing, and the exciting cause of all suffering. So she didn't have just a cause of suffering, but she also could see that that cause of suffering had a predisposing cause, and that predisposing cause had a remote cause for that suffering. And so she speaks about that predisposing, exciting, and cause. She says that God, the divine principle of the nature and man, is found to be the remote, predisposing, and present cause of all that is rightly done. Now she gives it in the positive sense and says the positive cause is also a cause that I can trace back to earlier causes, namely to the remote and to the predisposing, and then to the present cause. So we can see that that cause, and what is that cause, that first cause? That, she says, is God, the divine principle, mind. So suddenly we begin to see that we should no more think so much of that law of cause and effect, where every time we have an effect, we say, what is the cause of it, and put it down to something else than the divine mind. We can no more do that. Or we are not thinking holistically. We are not thinking scientifically. Which means, and that comes out over and over, that she says, all causation, not some causation. All causation is vested in the divine mind, capital M. So why should we ask for any other cause than the divine mind? Can you see? And we do that. Why do we do that? If Mrs. Eddy says the very opposite. So we are, I think we are really dumb people. Yeah, really dumb. For 40 years, 50 years, one is reading that textbook and reads those facts and then one does the very opposite. The very opposite. This is an enigma in itself. She says, all causation is mind, capital M, acting through spiritual law. She says, mind, not matter, is causation. She says, the divine mind is the only cause of existence, the only cause of existence. She says, immortal mind is the only cause. Well, alone in the textbook, I have read you 5 statements about that. How many more you find in the prose work? So it's all over the place. Why do we deal differently with our problems? We constantly nail the cause to something else. To something else. We don't accept that divine mind is the cause of all. Of all. Or, as we have said, that actually if we have a cause in the holistic sense, which we then could call a holistic cause, namely the divine mind, and could see that that has an effect, that cause, and that effect is actually, again, an effect that cannot happen anywhere else but in the realm of mind also. It cannot happen somewhere outside the whole. It must happen within the whole, or we split up the whole. So that we have also holistic effect. And if we can see that we have a wholeness causality and a wholeness effect, that we have actually only wholeness, and that we should only contemplate wholeness. Within there is not even any more a question of cause and effect. But if we want to have cause and effect perhaps seen a bit more rightly, then at least we should see that cause and effect are one and not two. And that's the step towards that sense which mostly you can find in prose works, not so much in the textbook. There you read, for instance, the greatest of all question was solved, namely, all effect, now we come to effect, all effect must be the offspring of a universal cause. So all effect, whatever the effect is, no matter if you break your leg in an accident, the cause of it must be seen in divine mind, or else we are not reasoning holistically, we reason just metaphysically. We just reason a little bit back to the immediate cause, but not further back until we come to the misunderstanding of the divine mind. Or she says, all cause and effect are in God. All cause, all effect are in God. We think, perhaps all cause is in God, but the effects are so horrible that they are outside of God. We put them right out of the paradise into the land of naught. She says, God is all in all, therefore in reality there is but one cause and effect. But one cause and effect. Mind is its own great cause and effect. This is really then the pinnacle. She sees he tries to approach that subject, which is so difficult, just as I try it in a seminar or in a summer school. I just try, how can I say it? Huh? And I approach it this way, and then I approach it this way, and then I say, perhaps I have approached it this way too, so as to bring out the right sense. So finally, she says, mind is its own great cause and its own great effect. So there is nothing going on but mind, mind, minding mind. That's all there is going on. But we don't believe it. We don't believe the text, but we read it, yes. And perhaps many of us will crucify ourselves for the textbook, but we don't live according to it. We don't do that. We do the very opposite most of the time. Why is that? That's not dishonesty. That's not being not in earnest. It is a great consciousness paradigm shift. And it's a terrific culture that we undergo in a whole lifetime to get out of those 1,000 years of traditional wrong thinking and wrong opinions out of it, and slowly in a transitional stage through trial and error, through steps of success and steps of defeat, we slowly crawl on and crawl on and take one rung after the other in the ladder and step up and step up, knowing really what is right. But in order to transform our whole awareness, not our thinking, that is easily done. The thinking can be changed very quickly. But our whole awareness, our whole attitude, all that which makes up our being, so that we are being the science, that takes culture. But thank God that we have a method now that shows which step can be taken in order that we go along that culture in the most direct way, so that we are not constantly misled to the right and to the left. Yes. So mind is its own great cause and effect. So isn't that terrific? At the law of God, in science, the law applies only to the law of God. And that law of God annuls that old sense of the law of cause and effect and says, no, the only law is mind. And mind is its own cause and effect. You can no more separate cause and effect. Here is cause and here is effect. This is that's an old concept. That belongs now to the antediluvians, no more to us. We should go, yeah, antediluvians. You know what I mean with antediluvians? Yeah? Very old, huh? Very outgrown, very obsolete. We have to be strict with ourselves in our thinking, even if we are sometimes not strict in our everyday life and so on. That doesn't matter so much. But in the honesty of the science, there we have to be very strict. Because without honesty to science, we will miss the mark. Yes. We come to the next criterion, namely system. Well, we know what system is from the dictionary. And so for a long time we have devoted ourselves to see what system is, and we have done quite a good job in considering the textbook as a system, Christian Science as a system. But perhaps it is good to recapitulate again what that system means and see, is the system that we were devoting ourselves to, is it a holistic system or is it just a mental system? System we have always taken as a part of science, where science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in a system. We have seen the system is built how? That we first have our elements as ideas, that these ideas are put into categories, that these categories are bound together as one, not as cause and effect, but as one. And so we have intertwined those three categories into one, and the intertwining of these categories is called system. The interrelationship of these categories, so that the categories don't stand alone, isolated, so that they are blending with each other, and that is called a system. So the relating of categories forms a system, a grid, a network, we can say, whatever the term is. These terms are now very much in discussion in the new books, in the new science. They all talk about the network and about interrelationship and the grid. So science, Mrs. Eddy has said, is woven into one web of consistency without seam and rent. She has given in this way a sense of system, just like a spider web is a system that has these lines from the middle to every direction, and then combined all those lines, see, that makes a system. So, Mrs. Eddy says, divine metaphysics is reduced to a system. This was the bugle call for John Dorley to investigate the textbook as a system. When he read that, he repeated it and repeated it, and we can't repeat it enough to see this is what we have to do. To reduce to a system, to a form that is comprehensible, see, now, what the purpose of a system? A system is not just an academic play, but is a very practical and near-to-life thing, namely a form comprehensible and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. And this system enabled the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based. So we know the importance of it through that short sentence. Now we make a break.